Bernard Cotton, known as Bernie, born on the 30th of June 1948.
How did you first get involved in hockey?
I'm a younger brother, so therefore I spent all my early years trying to emulate my elder brother, who was 3.5 years older than me, and he was introduced to hockey at Hitchin Boys School, or Hitchin Grammar School as it was then, which is the feeder school to Blue Hearts Hockey Club in Hitchin. So even before I went up to grammar school at the age of 11, I think I'd probably been playing hockey in the garden and watching lots of hockey at Blue Hearts, where my brother was playing, you know, for 4 or 5 years before that.
So when you went to school, was it very different from playing with your brother?
Well, yes, because I started playing with people my own age, and I actually managed to get a bit of an edge every now and then, whereas I was coming second to my brother. I was very, very fortunate, because in my age group at Hitchin, I shared with David Whittaker. We were in the same class at school and the same teams for rugby, hockey and cricket, and one or two others whose names I can't honestly quite remember. It was competitive, but we had strong teams, so it was good fun.
And did you play club hockey at the same time?
I was a sort of perpetual first reserve for the Blue Hearts Colts, which was their under 18 team on Sundays, when my brother was captain of the Colts. They went a season unbeaten. That was a great success. So I played 4 or 5 games there, but I was called out of class on a Friday and told I was playing for Blue Hearts third at Rickmansworth, you know, quite often, things like that, because the club used to dip into the school for young players.
So tell me about your progression through school hockey.
Well, school hockey, I was in obviously the age group teams, but when I was 15, my family moved from Hitchin to Northampton. So, and I had to move, and I went to Northampton Grammar School, which wasn't a hockey playing school. It's a rugby playing school, so my hockey suddenly became Sundays only at Northampton Saints Hockey Club. And obviously I played school rugby and was reasonably successful at schoolboy level at that. But hockey remained my first love. But I was lost. I was in Northamptonshire, which wasn't a great stronghold of hockey. And if it hadn't have been for, I think one Sunday we played a game against a team called Leicester Thursday, which is typical of hockey in those days on Sunday. And I played against a pair of Leicestershire players called Des Kershaw, I think it was, and David Cawthorn. And they asked me which county side I played for. And I said, well, nobody. I think I was 15, 16. Because Northamptonshire didn't have one. They said, well, you'd better come and play for us. And so I had to get myself to Wellingborough or Kettering or somewhere impossible I hadn't even heard of for a trial for Leicestershire and Northamptonshire schoolboys. And it was Loughborough. It was the old grass pitch at Loughborough on the airfield. And I think about it every time since I've driven into Loughborough to go to the Loughborough University. And they picked me, and I played 4 years for them and 4 years for the Midlands under 19s. So all that chasing around the garden as an 8, 9 and 10 year old gave me that background, and also playing club hockey instead of school hockey in those days gave me a little bit of I wasn't afraid of physical contact, let's put it that way.
And how did your brother's career go?
He played for Scotland under 23s, and I'm not quite sure whether he actually played an international for Scotland, but he was born in Scotland, you see. My mother's Scottish. I'm quite clearly was born in England and committed to England, although I did play once for Anglo-Scots, just in case I needed to take that route. Yes, I went to an England schools trial, and I played 2 years for England schoolboys. I was given some fantastic advice by my former hockey coach at Hitchin, Scottish Hockey International, called Bob McLeish, who coached David Whittaker as well. And he said, because he came down to watch the trials because he heard I was in, and he said, whenever you get the chance, pass to Mark Woodbridge. Because Mark Woodbridge of Teddington had played the year before and was a real quality player. So I was playing left half and he was playing inside left, so I did that. And of course, if you make good passes, they're well received, it helps you make you look good. But, so I played 2 years for England schoolboys and then went off to Northampton, went off to Cambridge University, which was a good time to go because Cambridge University had a fantastic team for 4 years. And battled with Hounslow, for the London League title. Each year I was there, and it was great fun. And I think it was through that exposure playing for Cambridge University in the London League, than as much as playing for the Midlands as in the adult team, that brought me to the attention of the selectors. And
so, who else was playing for Cambridge at that time?
Well, Paul Svelik was at the same college as me, and he played England and Great Britain until 1975-76. Who else was in that team? Mike Borden was, he only played for England under 21s, but he was a really dominant old style centre half, very, very good. And then through the years, John O'Keefe played with me for England, Gordon Nurse played for England. I had Kemlyn Foulkes, recently deceased this year, who played for Wales and Great Britain with me eventually. Tim Hill, who started his career at Cambridge and played for Wales. Dick Barker, a goalkeeper, played with him for 3 years. Surrey, England, Great Britain. Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time, yeah.
So where was your first England match?
My first England match was against Switzerland at Clarence Park, St Albans in 1970, I think. And I can't even remember the score. It was really like my first varsity match. It just went by in a flash. The emotion of actually achieving a goal and playing, it just went past so quickly. I suspect we might have won, because I don't think we've ever lost to Switzerland, but I didn't really have a lot to do with the attacking side of it, and I got through that and played a couple more times that year and was selected at the end of that season to go to the first European Cup in Brussels, where I was sat on the bench for the first couple of games, I think, and then was brought in to play against the Dutch.
How did you feel sitting on the bench?
Well, in those days, because I was very young, I was just so pleased to be in the side. I just was very fortunate to get a chance to play. The object then is, you get a chance to play, you just don't want to let anybody else in, because in a squad of 16 there weren't any substitutions in those days, so you were either picked for the game or you weren't, and in a squad of 16 it's unusual to have two left defenders, two left halves, and I can't remember who was playing the other one, but I did get a game. And then I suppose I didn't then relinquish that spot for 10 years, so that was a good start.
And did you have any major injuries in that period?
No, I was quite fortunate. I had a few wear and tear injuries, tendonitis in the knees. I had lots of cuts around the head, which seemed to be an occupational hazard at left half, doing the reverse tick tackles. And I suffered from heat stroke in the World Cup in 1975 in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, when we were halfway through the fifth period of extra time against the Argentinians.
This is pre-penalty strokes?
Yes, it was pre-penalty strokes. Or there might have been penalty strokes at the end of the five periods, but there were five periods of extra time, 7.5 minutes each, I think it was. So in the heat of Kuala Lumpur, that was really quite taxing. And we had used our substitutions. And I think that sort of experience in those fairly stressful conditions eventually brought in being able to use more substitutions.
So did you tour apart from the World Cup?
I toured with Great Britain to India in 1971.
Were the trials for Great Britain?
No, I think it was basically selected from the home internationals and other internationals, and then it went on to I sort of coincided with the start of the era where there were training weekends. So before a major tournament there would be 4, 5 or 6 depending on how much money there was, training weekends. So you were selected, in fact, not on a one-off trial, but through probably worked in my favour because I had quite a big engine and could keep on going, even though I might not have been as technically adept as others.
So where did you tour with GB?
Well, we went to India in 1971, and there were relatively few tours. I suppose the next one would have been India again in 1978, and then there was a Great Britain tour under Roger Self, his management, in 1979 to Australia, ending up playing in the Asanda tournament.
And what about Olympic teams?
Well, I was selected and went and played every game in the 1972 games, where we came 6th, which was quite an experience. I suppose I was the youngest. No, Terry Gregg from Ireland was the youngest, centre forward was the youngest player. I was the second youngest player. I was very fortunate. I played pretty well in Munich, and I was selected for the rest of the world team to play the rest of the world at the end of the tournament to play the champions. But that was cancelled because of the Israeli massacres. And I couldn't stay any extra time because I had to come back to get married. So I was booked on the plane out on the Monday, and the things went on until the Sunday. So everything was put back a day. Yeah. We all then trained, and I was captain at the time when we didn't go to Montreal in 1976. That still causes a lot of us a great deal of pain.
Why was that?
Well, the qualification system up until then was really about FIH rank. Well, they weren't rankings as such, FIH match form. But we had the misfortune to lose to Belgium in 1975 in a small tournament in Brussels. And of course the president of the FIH was René Franck, was Belgian. And they did have quite a good side, because Southgate played the Belgian champions Uccle in the European Club Championships in 1976, and Southgate beat them not easily but comfortably. So, but the thing that rankled was that when the African nations boycotted the Montreal Games and came out, we were first reserve nation, and the team got together and got to Heathrow, where we were for 24 hours waiting for the British Olympic Association to fly us out to take our place as the reserve nation. And that didn't come through. So why on earth I ended up working for the British Olympic Association for 16 years, I really don't know.
So, not the best introduction.
No. And the tournament in Montreal was lopsided. It was one short, and you could make an argument that New Zealand won the gold medal because one of the teams was missing from their pool, so they had 2 days rest before each game, and everyone else in the pool had one game. That sort of thing. So, but you can never tell. So I carried on again another 4 years. By which time I was not only married, which was pressure enough, but had 2 young children. So carrying on to Moscow I was not flavour of the month at home. And we qualified for Moscow. And then, of course, Margaret Thatcher pulled the British team out. And not many people remember which sports didn't go, because, of course, this was the start of the co-Ovit era in athletics, and we did well in rowing and so on and so forth, but British Hockey Board didn't send the team. So, sadly, I have to say, I trained for 3 and went to 1, but I was very lucky to go to the 1.
Did you enjoy the Olympics?
Fantastic.
What was so different about the Olympics from any other World Cup or other big tournaments?
Well, I think all hockey nations regard the Olympic Games as the pinnacle for hockey, no matter how hard the FIH tried to make the World Cup the pinnacle. So all nations develop their teams to be their best at that, the fourth year of an Olympic cycle, as opposed to the fourth year of a Hockey World Cup cycle. So in principle, I'm not particularly happy about tennis in the Olympic Games or rugby in the Olympic Games, because clearly it isn't the pinnacle for those sports. But it certainly is for hockey. And it's just so exciting to be, and challenging to be, in a hockey tournament within that environment, and hopefully concentrate throughout the Olympic fortnight on what you're doing in the hockey team, as well as being aware of what's going on around. If you get distracted, of course, then your hockey goes.
How long did you keep playing for GB after that?
No, I retired then.
And England?
I retired then as well. Yeah.
From both?
Yeah. And but I'd had the, in, because I was captain for about 8 years, 7 years, I think, of England, Great Britain, so it was a long period. And youngsters such as, I mean, Richard Dodds came into the side in 1980, and toured to Pakistan, went to the second Champions Trophy, where we won a bronze medal. And you know, so there was a bit of an overlap. Paul Barber had been in that side for a couple of years, and Corbin Bora started. Richard LeMann, I can remember watching on the television, the Lord's Day, was it always in March, wasn't it? The third weekend in March tournament on the BBC, and I'm watching somebody else playing left half in my place, and debut from Richard LeMann and people like that. It was great, new era. But I didn't leave the sport. Obviously, I came back after a year's break, and coached England under-19s for 3 years, and then was talked into joining Roger Self and David Whittaker in the management team for the GB side. They came back with a bronze medal from Los Angeles, and that was so just a fantastic result from where they were. And I'm sure others will tell you the story of them being brought in as first reserve nation.
Yes.
As it happened. This is quite ironical, isn't it? And they went on and won the bronze medal. And I was moved to go down to Heathrow and meet them off the plane, which is a very silly thing to do, because sort of the week later I got a phone call from Roger saying, will you come and join David and I? Things are getting quite busy in my business. Will you come and be assistant manager and help with the managing and the admin and the coaching with David? And so we did 4 years, the three of us working together. A little bit of a Southgate group, I know, but it turned out well in the end.
Did you enjoy coaching as much as playing?
Yes. I mean, if you can't play, it's best to be involved, and in some senses. And I coached, obviously, I always coached at school. I was a schoolmaster, so it's part of my DNA to impart knowledge and tell people what to do. So I'd always coached, and I enjoyed. I did a lot of, you know, small coaching bits behind. David was obviously the league coach, and Roger had been our coach, so we all sang off the same hymn sheet. And Roger did lots of work with Ian Taylor and the goalkeepers, and I did lots of work with the defensive corners and so on and so forth. But just did whatever David wanted us to do, and that went so well that, in fact, Roger said, leading up to Seoul in '88. I think there was a change in, it wasn't a new finance act that meant that independent financial advisors became IFAs, were born after that finance act, and people who dealt with insurance had to decide whether they were going to be part of an insurance company or independent.
Yes.
And Roger decided that was his business to go independent, which meant he was very, very busy. So I took a sabbatical from teaching at Bedford School, and went and worked in the England hockey offices in Milton Keynes. In fact, it was at King's Cross before Milton Keynes, and worked as the international teams administrator. So I did all the admin for the under-16s. This meant under-16s, under-18s, under-21s, seniors. And that gave me time to be the manager as well. So I was manager of the England men's side, and then the GB side following 88. GB board asked me to take over from Roger, so I did. I was manager in 1992.
That must have been a wonderful experience.
Oh, just fantastic. I don't know
what your memories of that trip.
Hard work. These were the days before. I'll just give you one example. It was the start of video analysis in those years, but we didn't have any computerized digital tools, so it was my job to stay up late at night with a VCR full cassette and an M5 Panasonic camera attached to a small television set that we took out with us, and go through the video of the match and note down every significant happening, thus notational analysis, noting down when it happened, so that when we had the team meetings, David and I sat and then went through it, my job would be to roll the video through to the exact point David wanted. But so it was hard work, great fun, fantastic memories of winning, and you know, immense pride in seeing the team up on the top of the podium.
Sean Curley gets most of the credit because he was the golden boy of the TV back home. Do you think that was fair?
I don't think it's unreasonable. It happens in football, isn't it? If you happen to be a centre forward and you score lots of goals, everybody else in the team's job was to deliver the ball onto Sean Curley's stick. And yet he scored, his best goal must have been the winning goal in the semi-final against Germany, where he got to a ball that many other people wouldn't have done. But it cast a bit of a shadow over Imran Shawani and Stephen Batchelor and so on, who were great players in their own rights, and of course the backup players as well.
Was there any resentment from in between the players?
Not that I know of, other than a rather healthy rivalry between the Southgate group and the Slough group, because which manifested itself in the rooming lists. We were given three rooms in the Olympic Village for hockey, and we had 21 people. We had 16 players and five management. So the management took over one apartment in the middle, and we put an extra bed in the lounge of each of the others, so they could have eight players in one block and eight players in the other. So there's Paul Barber and the Slough guys in one, and Curley and Dodds and the Southgate in another, just to keep things nice and calm. And then of course we use the lounge and the kitchen area in the management apartment for the meetings. So it worked out pretty well. Yeah.
And you carried on to 92.
I carried on to 92. Very sadly, we came sixth. Perhaps should have been fifth. We lost our places in the seeding into the Champions Trophy because of that. It wasn't so much after the Lord Mayor Show. It was as much as, you know, we lost. Curley had been injured. We lost our core of the team, really. We lost Dodds, we lost Barber, we lost Taylor. And we filled these slots with younger people. And Robert Clift as captain, and senior professionals, John Pottinger, they did as much. David Faulkner, he did as much as they could. Well, in fact, in the end, we didn't pick David Faulkner, and he'd never let me forget it, because he wasn't quite in that sort of form. 25 years later, perhaps may have changed our mind a bit. But perhaps we shouldn't have picked Curley. But who would be the manager to drop Sean Curley, having scored 11 goals in two previous Olympic Games? But he only scored one, you see. So he never did get quite back to fitness.
What did you do after that?
That ended my time as a full-time employee with England and Great Britain Hockey, because I had been full-time manager and administrator and so on. So I went back to teaching for 3 years at Bishop's Stortford College, where I started. I taught both my sons A-level geography, coached them both hockey, and when the younger one left, I took up an opening at the Olympic Association, because the 1996 games weren't that successful for GB, with only one gold medal. So the British Olympic Association decided to bolster up the technical side of the games. So I went in as a technical officer, with a remit to improve the performance of the staff at Olympic Games, managers and coaches. And for 12 years I ran a bespoke team managers, team leaders training programme across all sports. And I was involved in lots of sports admin, like running the qualifying standards, all the admin for the qualifying standards and things like that. But I suppose my main achievement was the team leader programme, which had, somebody else had started. Kevin Hickey had started, the old boxing coach, but I developed. And I then helped in organising the preparation camps, the holding camps that hockey usually support, they do. And I ran, I suppose, the other top thing I did was running the holding camp before the Beijing Games in Hong Kong. It's like a 5-year project, £1 million budget, and when it all goes right, that really is quite satisfying.
Are you still involved at all?
Well, since I've now got, I don't have any excuses. I retired after the London Games from the BOA. I've succeeded a long-standing president of Bishopsthorpe Hockey Club, Colin Barber. I'm now president of the club, just at the time when we're trying to bring hockey back to our clubhouse and put a pitch on our grounds and build a new clubhouse with a cricket club and the tennis club. So there's more and more meetings. It's all in sports administration, it's always finance. Meetings and lack of finance. Yeah, so it's always challenges, and that keeps me youngish.
And your sons, did they carry on playing?
The elder one, he played a bit. He was good at school, but it drifted away a bit at university. The younger one played at Cambridge, played England under-16s. He was in the under-18 and under-21 squads. Never quite had the fast enough hands, but he had a really good engine. They should have had him, really, because he'd have kept the midfield going. And he played 9 seasons at Southgate. So there's a little bit of a Southgate theme going on. And he retired when he got married. 2004. Yeah.
Do you still play at all?
No, I stopped. I stopped playing, but carried on coaching. I played some vets hockey at Bishop Stortford. I coached the club there for 5 years in the early 80s. No, 90s. It's a bit sad, isn't it, when you forget the decades in the 90s. And
you're not tempted to take up Grand Masters?
Well, I did play in one game somewhere in Brussels a long, long time ago, but no, I have hip problems coming on, and I've even had to give up golf, which I was trying to get back into. So I trained enough, did enough practice, and I've seen enough international hockey to last lots of people a lifetime. So it's nice to come back to the tournament just for the odd day, but not the whole time.
And not have any responsibility, just enjoy watching.
Absolutely no responsibilities at all, but very graciously I've got access today for the semi-final into the VIP areas, and I suppose most of the people I rubbed up against over the decades are in there rather than in the bleachers. So it's good fun to see them and have chats.
Looking back on your hockey career, what stands out as the memory?
Are we allowed more than one?
Yeah.
Standing in the stands or down on the pitch watching the gold medal team collect their medals. Yeah. That's a big one. Scoring a hat-trick in a European Cup final for Southgate to win the European Cup, and we won the European Cup 3 years in succession. From a personal playing point of view, outside of the international arena, that was a real highlight. No club's ever done it since. So. Slough have won the European Cup, obviously, but
not three in a row.
And
what about the friends that you've made through hockey?
Well, just this lunchtime I bumped into Chris Sutherland, who we used to have tremendous spats, England Scotland schoolboys and England Scotland under 20 what's-its and seniors. Those are hockey acquaintances are there, but you know, one's real friends are not necessarily in hockey. They're local, local, and in many occupations and sports. But I'm always at the, if I'm not at the hockey club at Bishop Stortford by 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, winter or summer, they usually send out a search party.
So hockey can't do without you, even if you can do
without. No, no, only the bar profits.
Yeah. Bernie, it's been great talking to you. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
For sharing your memories.